My name is Gary Butterfield, he, him.
My name is Kay Ross, she, her.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs. It is a Games Club podcast.
And this week we are doing our fourth arcade special. Our first since 2022, Gary.
Yeah, it's been a minute. One of the things, the two things that I wanted, that I like for the show, that was like, you know, part of my personal part of like the vision, not claiming credit for the vision. But I don't want to ignore sectors of games that count, you know, and early on, you know, we made a big effort to do PC games and stuff like that. But the arcade is a big part of video gaming. The other half of it is not ignoring iOS, which we've largely done.
Yes.
So the 1 for 2 ain't bad though. So I wanted to not ignore the arcade. Kay moved out here and we are lucky enough to have pretty close access to like one of the best arcades. My favorite, the best arcade I've been to. It's not, you know, I haven't been to all of them in the world.
Yeah. But it's pretty hard to beat. And yes. This is not like sponsored content, but this is us saying like, hey, if you're in the area, this is probably worth spending a few hours at.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little bit of a drive from Portland, but not too bad. And it's really cool.
Yeah.
Of course, the place we're talking about is called Next Level Games. It is a pinball museum. It shows up on the map, but and does have a lot of pinball, has a lot of arcade games as well. And what we did is over the weekend, it's free play. There you go, and you get to play it for as long as you want. You get a little wristband. And just went in there and played a bunch of games. Previous arcade roundups we've done, we kind of called our shots. You know, chose three games and kind of did a full waff on them. This time we're doing a little bit different, which I like. One of the things that I realized last time we did an arcade game is that arcade games are pretty rarely interesting from beginning to end.
Yeah.
Is that true? Is that a crazy opinion? Like, you kind of get it. You know, there are ones where you get to see some cool spectacle in the end, but like the weird place arcades, you know, the weird place in gaming they do take up.
Yeah.
It's not a beginning to end experience a lot of the time.
Yeah. I mean, they kind of live and die on like their premise and then like the first like four or five times you play them.
Yes.
Right. Like, you know, I'm not going to say like, oh, it's the first 30 seconds or whatever. It's got to hook you. But like, you know, like you got to, it's got to get you. Right.
Yeah.
You know, like there may be some figuring it out, but like, you know, getting to the end or, you know, even excelling in score or, you know, reaching some kind of point after several hours. Like, I don't know. That is the less interesting part.
Well, in forcing that, you know, so like what we had done previously is, or at least for me, is I'd pick an arcade game that I was kind of interested in and be like, this is the one. And some of those games that are really good to kind of pick up and play aren't very good to play for either pursuing an ending or a score.
No.
You know, some of them are, but some of them are not. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of focusing on that first part, which is kind of how I tend to experience arcades generally. Mm-hmm. You know, for me at least, like I don't go in to be like, okay, time to beat this game. I go in and I kind of graze and then wait for things to take my, you know, pick up my interest.
Yes. So, I graze as well.
Yeah. I'm a grazer.
Yeah. No. What was your kind of strategy for going and picking stuff?
Yeah. So part of the kind of remit I asked for stories for this, just because we've gotten arcade stories before a lot, was weird arcade stories. And what I was trying to do, I've been on a big, this year and a little bit into last year, a big retro game kick in my personal gaming time. Mm-hmm. Just because they're simple. And a simple thing is appealing to me right now. So I've been looking, you know, watching YouTubes and looking at old arcade games and stuff. So I was going to play and at least check out anything I hadn't heard of. Mm-hmm. And then I had a couple of called shots of like, this is really interesting. I'd like to get more time with this. for this thing. But mostly I play anything I hadn't heard of.
Yes.
Through this.
Yeah. Pretty much my strategy too, when I was selecting stuff to specifically cover, I wanted to hit things that were hard to play at home. Like they had something about the cabinet, something about the control scheme. You know, not all of them that I picked ended up covering that, but like a huge part of the arcade is the variety and the hardware. And honestly, some of the spectacle associated with them. Yeah.
It's one of the only places where the super odd interface thing actually works.
Yeah.
You know, for some reason, like, I'm always happy if I go to the arcade and it's like, you know, this game is controlled by like a cricket paddle that you pick up it on. It's on a little metal chain. It's heavier than anything in the world. And like, you have to swing it at three different heights.
Yeah.
If I'm doing that on the Wii, I'm in hell. Hell. But for the arcade, it's kind of fun for a second because it's the arcade itself is an experience. It's not as much a value proposition per individual thing.
Yeah. So, you know, like, oh, that monkey's in a ball and I'm controlling it with a banana or with a joystick that's a banana. Yeah. Like, that's fun. I don't know.
Kind of like that. Yeah. So what we did was we each have 9 games. We kind of have them in 3 rough categories of like, really actually pretty good, one kind of interesting idea, and then like, these kind of suck, but there's something there, you know, just to talk about. And we're going to ping pong. And this is not going to be beginning to end, you know, butts to nuts, like previous arcade. Offs. Do you want to go first or should I go first?
I'll go first.
I guess, should we start with good or should we, because then we're going to have a petering out feeling as well.
Yeah.
But then we can kind of trash some stuff. So I don't know. I could see the argument for starting with good or bad.
Yeah. Let's start with good because I also have fun. I don't know. Like, I don't know that there's going to be a petering out. I think that we have fun taking stuff apart.
We'll get angrier and angrier.
Yeah. Or if not angry, just like, oh yeah, no, like this is critically interesting to me, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will be angry enough to fight each of these arcade games physically. Yeah.
I'll get started here. I've got one Gary, I want to call you out. We had a little snack break in the middle.
We did.
And
I guilty kinda, as charged.
Yeah. Oh yeah, we eat. And I kind of explained, you know, I kind of mentioned some stuff that like caught my eye, like, oh, I'd never seen that. You did call my selection of games meat and potatoes.
I did say they're all meat and potatoes. The there's some, like, some things. Some famous Midway games.
Yeah.
The Midway classics.
There's at least 2 or 3 of these that were new to me. Apparently are, you know, really old hat. If you spend a little bit of time in the whole arcade era.
If you're in the my circles. It's worth noting there's no universe in which I was like, don't talk about these.
I know.
For people listening. I know you know that, but for people listening, I was just like, oh, those are actually really famous games. Those are like, you know, like Bubbles.
Yeah.
Bubbles. People know Bubbles. Bubbles is fun to talk about. Nothing wrong with Bubbles.
I didn't know Bubbles, but that's a later category. The one I'm going to talk about right now is Timber, which is like 1984. It's Bally Midway. And I think I might have been drawn to it because it's designed by the same guy who made Tapper, and you can really see it.
Jake Tapper's dad.
Yeah.
designed Tapper.
He did. One of the Vanderbilts. He used his Vanderbilt fortune.
Here's Tapper. Yeah. This game is fucking sick. I played this last time we went to Next Level.
Yeah.
Bachelor party kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. You're playing as a lumberjack in a tree yard. And it's kind of like whack-a-mole. You have these trees that grow up really, really fast. And you have to, you play it in rounds. And you're trying to cut down a quota of these trees before time runs out. It's got a unique control scheme. You move around with one stick, and then the other stick can only hit left or right. And that determines which way you swing your axe. Mm-hmm. And I was drawn to this because, like, I don't know, it's fun in an arcade to have a game that, like, just picks a profession and goes for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Back in the kind of Wild West, before gaming stuff was codified, I love that idea that, like, we can try to emulate anything.
Yeah.
And that might mean that, to our mind, firefighters are playing trampoline catch. mm-hmm. nonstop. The thing we've seen in a cartoon, that's all firefighters do. You yeah. know? But yeah, I like that a lot too. I'm very drawn to that.
Yeah. But there's a lot of like neat strategy to this, because you want to control which direction the trees fall mm-hmm. when you're chopping them down. So like which side you approach them from, changes which way they're going to fall. And you kind of want to leave yourself like a little bit of a lane to move, because moving over a fallen tree will trip you and cost you time. Also, if you don't move when the tree is falling, then it will fall on top of you and you will be stunned for a certain amount of time.
Yeah. Kill you in real life.
It would kill you in real life. What does kill you in this is bears.
Well, it's not just bears. They've yep. formed an uneasy alliance with their natural enemy.
An unholy alliance with yeah. their natural enemy.
It's an axis of evil.
Yeah. Bears will show up on the sideline and throw beehives at you.
Yeah. And they hate each other because the bees make the honey. And yeah, the bears want honey.
They want the honey.
They need the honey because they want the honey.
Yeah. And the bees go for the eyes, and yeah, it's a whole thing. I'm sure there's cartoons about it. But it's not just that the bees are hitting you. The bees are also humiliating you. The yeah. bees strip you naked.
Yeah. It's back in the Ghosts and Goblins yeah. kind of arcade thinking that like your second bit of life bar is you in heart colored boxes, like little heart boxers with hearts on them.
Yeah.
That's an entire on death's door. You go down to the ward at the hospital. It's all these old men and old women just, in boxers with little hearts on them.
The more hearts, the more dead they are.
Yep. Yeah. It's the reverse of Zelda 2.
Yep. But it's, I don't know. I dug this. I thought that the way that it escalated was super nice. Mm-hmm. You know, cause like the first few rounds, like, you know, you've got a point about this in one of the games you're gonna hit, but like this feels exceedingly fair to me in a way that does make it seem like, possibly this didn't take off and show up in as many places, because it keeps you playing a little bit longer. There's not a lot of turnover to it.
Yeah, maybe it didn't make enough money for people to be a huge hit.
Yeah.
As a thing. Like, it is the essential tension of arcade games, which we've talked about, like, from the beginning of the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this idea that they do want your money, so they have to be not just hard. Sometimes there are ones that are just hard, mm-hmm. but they do have to, like, a lot of times they're a little unfair.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that the strategy of trying to control which way the trees fall to leave yourself a path is what separates this. Otherwise, it would just be whack-a-mole with Robotron controls a little mm-hmm. bit. I don't know, that elevates it. The fact that there is no maze, but you have to make it yourself.
Yeah. Good game. Mm-hmm. Like, I like Timber quite a bit.
Yeah.
Midway could, you know, was good.
Yeah,
in the '80s, my first top of the pops is Zybots from 1987 by Atari Games. Lynx fans are going crazy. This was the killer app for the Lynx.
Was it now?
Yeah, the port to this one of the killer apps. Mm-hmm. This is a third person shooter. It is a very early one. Looking at the history of third person shooters, it gets a little tricky because like from the side is technically third person.
Yeah,
people talking about Contra and shit, and then
Contra does have the behind the character sections, that does though.
Have those bits as well. But like battle tanks and stuff, like kinda Space Harrier, you know, kinda like
no.
This plays to me. This is the first one I felt plays a little bit like how we play them now.
Yeah,
it's a third person shooter in a 3D maze layout. The original idea for this was it was going to be a sequel for Gauntlet. You play as two very straight men. Rock Hardy or Ace Gunn. And when they're not busy coming up with new ways to Rusty Venture, they are navigating this maze, collecting power-ups. You're fighting enemies. You're looking for the exit. And the environments are nothing. Like, it's 3D, mm-hmm. you know, which is cool at the time and stuff. What's really cool, though, is you have this really unique control scheme. You have a joystick that you can then rotate the top of mm-hmm. to turn your facing so you can strafe. Things like that. You have cover in this. Like, there are obstacles in the maze, and you will get into kind of like shootouts, like almost like Old West shootouts with different robots and things where you're using this cover and peeking out from behind it.
Yeah.
Again, 1987. There's a mini map in this? Like the actual, looking at this, I understand why this was such not a hint, because it looks overwhelming and it's a bizarre Frankenstein cabinet.
It's really intimidating to look at, just the interface. So like the main gameplay area is only one quarter of the screen. Yep. It's real like microcomputer, PC kind of stuff.
There's very the mini map. Different panes. There's a mini map. There's a little section that has your stats in it. There's a little legend. Mm-hmm. And then there's the screen for another player to jump in. And it does, you have advantages if you play two player. The mm-hmm. way this tried to make, you know, more money, speaking of arcade stuff, was to encourage people to play at the same time because each character got an advantage.
Yeah.
There's a little advertisement that plays, basically, it's like, jump in, you get more firepower, players cannot hurt each other. Like, they tell you the why you'd want to do it two players. Mm-hmm. You know, it'd be sick also to independently explore this maze.
Oh, yeah.
Together. So, like, genuinely really fun. It's in between levels, you know, you have this kind of risk reward as you're moving through levels where you want to get more coins while you're out, but you also want to get the exit as soon as possible so you don't take damage, because in between levels you can kind of work this economy and get power-ups, recharge your things, get you know, individual bonuses. There are hidden shops that have hidden bonuses in them. It's real neat.
Like, just like so far ahead of its time,
ludicrously.
Like in relation to that, like I'm really surprised that we have not seen like a roguelite version of this.
Me too. Or more like Zybots likes.
Yeah,
you know, it's something where when I, you know, I always try to remember. I always got it confused with Xenophobe, and would always try to remember Zybots. I was like, oh, there's that really cool game. Yeah. I should. Spend
you just
some
did
time
it on the on the Silent Debuggers episode of Abject Suffering. Yeah,
it was kind of a Zybots like in some ways, you know, but without the strafing and stuff. You know, it's a worse Zybots. And I expected this to be a big influence on things, and it's not.
Yeah,
It does not even show up in like history of third person shooter. Kind of segments and stuff, even though it is relatively early. It's not earlier in Space Harrier. But pretty early and feels more like that. And the guy who made this, Ed Log, is a legend. Like this dude co-created Asteroids and Gauntlet, Centipede, a lot of things like that. You can kind of see the Gauntlet DNA in this a little bit as like a 3D Gauntlet. He ended up working on San Francisco Rush, that series as well, which those are pretty fun. Neat game. I wish that there's, you know, I understand why a home port would be difficult. A lot easier now at dual sticks, but would have been very difficult for a time of this. But Zybots.
Yeah. After you brought up that this was here, I sought it out. The only thing that I think that could like save this, not save this, but like something that would make this even better, keeping most of the implementation the same, a quick turnaround. Would be pretty nice. like, you know, pressing like double pressing down on the movement stick to do a quick turnaround would be nice. But
enemies will sneak up on you, and it's really tricky. Like you to get kind of good at Zybots, which I don't, you know, didn't do. Yeah. But you have to be keeping an eye on the mini map because they engage with things sneaking up on you. Monsters will show up on the map, but there's one monster per level. These things called guardians that don't show up on the map. And those are what's going to ambush you from behind if you're able to, you know, internalize the mini map. And you can buy a power-up that makes them appear on it. So they can't sneak up on you. And you can make a power-up that makes arrows point at nearby monsters as they approach.
Oh, nice.
So they can't get the drop on you. So the game accounts for it in ways that are worse than a quick turnaround. Like a quick turnaround would be better.
Yeah, but just like, fuck, what year is this? 1987. Here's 3D. Here's free 3D movement and a mechanic where you have to like really be up on your situational awareness.
Yeah, it's like, really neat.
Yeah.
Love it.
That's a pretty big demand.
What is your second game? I was going to say number two, but these aren't ranked.
Yeah. The other one in kind of my top of the pops, you know, like definitely seek these out category is 1988's Forgotten Worlds by Capcom. And this is a shoot them up. You play as one of two dudes on like jetpacks. You're trying to defeat the evil god Bios, who has turned Earth into Dust World.
Ooh, Dust World.
Dust World, yeah. Do you think, okay, this is a pretty standard shoot 'em up, but we have another kind of different control scheme here. This is a shoot 'em up where you can very finely control the direction that you aim, because you're moving around with one stick, and then and your fire button is also a dial, like an Arkanoid style dial that you can turn, changing the direction that you aim, and then you press it into fire. And if you mash it, you do your kind of like smart bomb thing. Mm-hmm. And this is pretty easy as far as shoot 'em ups go. Like, this was part of Capcom's goal with it, was to address complaints that arcade games were just kind of getting too difficult. Something that I like about that, aside from just like a nice little like refresh, some bones for the newbies, is that it changes the strategy of a shoot 'em up. In terms of, you know, and a shoot 'em up, a lot of the time, you know, aiming at and hitting something puts you in a little bit of danger, right? You're thinking less of your motion. You have to like get right in front of it where it can possibly shoot you. It's a little bit of a, you know, find little press your luck kind of deal. Being able to shoot and move in slightly different directions adds an awful lot of, like, it's more to keep track of, but it does change the calculus of these quite a bit, without making it, you know, completely like, okay, I can free aim at any time. Like, you do have to like dial in which direction you're going to go, but it offers new ways to clear the screen, I think.
Yeah, think about Yoshi's Island, when you have the control scheme where it will freeze.
Yeah.
On a part where you like ratchet up the aim and then it will hold in that position.
Yeah.
It's like that. This is also something I played during my home arcade phase when I was really into the little fakey arcade things. This was on the Capcom one.
Okay.
I struggled with this game. I found this hard to get used to. Not that it was bad. I just found it hard.
Yeah, there's kind of a patting your tummy and rubbing your head kind of thing about it until you get like the muscle memory for it. Because I don't know that I've played another game, another shoot 'em up that like does this.
Yeah, it's neat. It's a really cool game. It's very very slick. It's co-op as well. Mm-hmm. Doing this co-op is really fun.
Yeah.
It's interesting how much, because I have another game that is also involves, you know, shooting in multiple directions that you're not moving. One of the secret, you know, recipe things of arcades that I never quite put together like this is moving and shooting in different directions. Mm-hmm. You know, from Robotron, Smash TV, things like that. Like, that is something that consoles could not do for a long time.
Yeah.
And then even once they could do it, kind of chose not to for a while. Mm-hmm. But it's a real game changer.
Yeah.
You know, it's a strafing, like things like that are really make a lot of the like movement techniques we take for granted now had a gulf in the home console market of availability.
Yeah. I mean, like it was also like not terribly easy to do on PCs at the time as well. You know, talking like in, you know, 1988, things like that, when a lot of PC games were controlled with like joysticks as well, as limited. And that's kind of illustrated by the fact that Capcom kept trying to bring this to home markets and it just didn't work. Like there was a Genesis version of this where you had to like fine tune, adjust your aiming by pressing the A and C buttons, and the B button in the middle would fire. Sounds like a fucking nightmare.
I've played that version. It is very tricky as well. Like it does not work nearly as well. It's like the other thing, you know, people talk about dials, you know, things like for Breakout. Mm-hmm. What is the word I'm looking for? Not a dial. That type of control scheme.
That's what I call them, like the rotary. Yeah.
I feel like it has a name that Jerry Parrish uses that I can't remember now. But like a dial like that, also something that has, you know, there are peripherals, but something has not been cracked. So like when you end up with a, similar to this, when you want a fine level of analog control like that, we kind of can't get it. You know, breakouts at home are never quite as good. Like I will always play a breakout. I like breakout, but then you need the dial because you need really, really twitchy, subtle controls. For this, I also want that.
Is spinner the word that they use? Maybe
it could be
possibly. Yeah, I don't know. I just did a search. Dial is just what I've always called that. But yeah, that like without buying a dedicated one of these, and it's weird because that was like some of the first controllers, controllers, right?
Yeah.
You know, was your Pong dial. Did you ever see on the DS, like they put out like a Space Invaders, kind of like update. And they just kind of they gave you a like a dial that you could just like plug into the GBA cart. It was like, here is this other peripheral that gives you a new control mode on your DS.
Yeah, I've seen that before. Mm-hmm. There weren't a whole lot of games that used it.
Yeah,
if I remember, but I've seen it in used game stores. I don't think I was looking Arkanoid at games contemporaneously, yeah. But
yeah, it's neat. I really, you know, this caught me off guard. Also, like the bosses are huge, and everything just kind of has this fun little 80s psychedelic. Like you're flying around like psychedelic Babylonian mindscapes and stuff.
Yeah,
it's great.
Shit's great. Second game I want to talk about is RoboCop 2. This is 1991, Data East. The original RoboCop arcade game was very popular. It's a one plane, you know, beat 'em up, like Kung Fu, you know, something like that. You go forward and punch guys. This is, looks like a Final Fight belt scroller kind of thing, but it's not quite. Your basic attack is shoot, and you have a button on each side. So you have a button for shoot being in front of you and shoot behind. Mm-hmm. So you can move and shoot, behind you and in front of you. Just on those, you can't shoot up or anything like that.
Yeah.
So it's still essentially 2D.
So on the cabinet that we played, that was very ergonomically uncomfortable. There is also a jump button kind of hidden up under a shelf almost. I didn't realize that there was a jump button when I went to play this.
The arcade it's real weird. It looks like a study carrel.
Yeah.
If you remember those from college libraries, mm-hmm. like it's meant to hide your vote. from your neighbors. It's a penis non-comparison device at a urinal. Like you're very enclosed in while playing RoboCop 2.
Yeah.
So you go to the right, you shoot guys a lot of different ways. You just shoot a bunch of dudes. You have a jump. RoboCop jumping is very funny. Jumping and shooting backwards is one of the most, I haven't noticed as dandy. I don't mean that as a slur. I mean like an old timey, like guy pushing a ring. Yeah. With a stick for RoboCop. But what's cool about this is it's not super innovative, but it's still neat. This is really fair for the genre. You mostly outgun your opponents in this, which never happens. You know, one of the things I don't like, you play the Superman arcade game and guys are punching you and you're taking like a fourth of your health.
Come on, bud.
It's reason that no one's ever made a good Superman game and no one ever will. You can't. He's an invincible character. With this, I did feel like RoboCop. Yeah. And as we all know, Robo, like you want to go and extrajudicially execute a lot of guys with Mohawks.
Yeah.
That's what RoboCop do. So it feels really good. And it feeling very fair and outgunning your opponents really, really supported the fantasy. Another thing that was really cool is there's a lot of spectacle to it. At the end of the first level, the first boss is a van that tries to crash into you. And you're just tapping the button, which I don't care for. I never want to do that again. But you're doing it to push the guy's holding down the gas, and you're just pushing the van back as it breaks on RoboCop, and the guy gets increasingly more stressed out. Really, really good. It's based on the plot of RoboCop 2. So Kane is still alive as like a brain.
Yeah. Oh no. You get Tom Noonan's brain in a jar.
It's really good. And it's what I want. I actually lost the auction for that.
Oh.
The other thing that's really neat is there are, it switches up modes. This was a very popular thing in the arcade that went to the console for a little while. A lot of NES games that do this for bonuses or other stages. But these are also pretty successful and fun. You move into a gallery shooter sequence where RoboCop exists in them. It's not first person. Mm-hmm. It's like Wild Guns.
Yeah.
There.
It's seamless. Like, you will just like go like, you know, in a level, you'll be going down an alley and then there will be an intersecting alley and there are dudes coming down it and Robo will just turn and face. So suddenly you're doing a third person shooter.
Yeah, it's really neat. With, again, relatively fair. Projectiles home in on you a little bit, but they're really slow.
Yeah.
There are segments between levels that are driving segments where you drive and shoot at the same time. The driving is largely automatic. The shooting, you know, you're moving a crosshair, shooting down helicopters and shit that are trying to fight RoboCop. But it's very seamless, you know, kind of just integrated perfectly in the story. Really fun, really fair feeling. This feels like this should have been a big hit. Mm-hmm. I think maybe one of the reasons it wasn't is because it's not that hard and it is like 20 minutes long.
Yeah.
You know, so it either people could get to the end of it. Again, we have that problem with possibly with throughput.
Mm-hmm.
there. It's also by 1991, there were better looking games than this. Yeah. Like, this does look really good to me, but by then this probably wasn't cutting edge.
Yeah. Wasn't drawing a lot of eyes. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of walk bys. Mm-hmm. So love RoboCop 2 in the arcade though. Let's go. Yeah.
And gosh, just what a movie to make a arcade game based off of.
I know.
Right.
No, it sucks that RoboCop 1 arcade game, which has such a fun story, is mostly RoboCop punching people.
Yeah.
I feel like RoboCop is like the cartridge family Simpsons. Like, he shoots the remote to use it. Like, why would RoboCop use a punch?
Come on.
You know, he's got a gun. He's got unlimited ammo.
Yeah. Yeah. Ridiculous that he would lower himself like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My last one for like the is some real Dave and Buster's slop.
Yeah.
But it's actually really fun insofar as they brought Burnout to the arcade. They just didn't call it that. I'm talking about Need for Speed Heat Takedown. Mm-hmm. This was put out, I need to find my notes because I was watching a video of RoboCop 2. There we go. This was developed by Adrenaline Amusements. When you get to modern arcade games, you start getting into stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it was funny. It was put out in 2022. This is like a big arcade dominating racing game. And like you can have like four of them hooked together. I think Level Up had eight of them in a row. So technically, mm-hmm. you know, two different races could be going on at the same time. And you're competing with the other people that it's kind of hooked up to. I feel ridiculous kind of talking about this because it's just like, it's just Burnout. It's street racing in nice shiny cars in a Miami-like city. It does the drifting and the boosting just like Burnout does. And you're really incentivized to just fucking run people off the road. Like,
yeah.
You know, I was using my Burnout strategies, you know, to do like pit maneuvers and take people out. And like, that was the way that I won, was just to do these spectacular, huge crashes while also avoiding the police. And you know what I did to the police? I fucking ran them off the road.
Yeah. It's, you can always do that.
Yeah.
It's always ethical.
Mm-hmm.
This was something, I was going to ask how the police play into it. Because when you played this at my bachelor party with Will, I watched for a little bit and it seemed like a thing where like, I got this impression, I don't know where I got it from, that you could like sick the police on people. Like you could somehow manipulate them. Is that a thing or did I dream that?
I don't know. Okay. I played a few rounds of this. Also, like it's a little long. It's like a five race, series that you do. So I'm not aware if you can sick the police on people. I think that the police are just there as kind of a little bit of a rubber band on you. Like if you are out ahead, the police will start kind of like chasing you. And you know, if they get you, like if they take you down, then you're delayed for a few seconds and you've got to get back on the road and go after them. It's like a blue shell that you can avoid. Yeah.
there's a mini game where you're like looking at dash cam footage.
Just a booming voice coming out of the speakers in the in the headrest. Arraigned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Family court. Outstanding warrant.
Yeah. But like, I don't know. Burnout in the arcade, when you can just play alongside your buddies. It was super fun to play it with Will, you know, because we were trash talking each other for most of the time. And it does this thing that the modern arcade racer games do, which is they have a little webcam that takes your picture and it puts a little icon over you for other people when you're racing.
I'm so glad that Will has you to play games like that where you trash talk now.
Uh-huh. It's like his
favorite thing in the world, and I don't care. Yeah. I can't do it. I can't provide Will that kind of enrichment. You know, I just need to place a K in his enclosure so he can fill up that meter.
Yeah. Basically a mirror. It's like putting a mirror in with a bird.
Yeah. I'm just joking.
I know.
He doesn't live in an enclosure.
He has a house with a wife.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is, I like arcade racing games generally. The competitive aspect is not my favorite part. I just want to race. I'm very slow and steady. Flying is a true model you know, plain person. But Burnout in the arcade does sound fun. And it did also make me just want more Burnout DNA in things in general.
Yeah.
Like, it is wild that Burnout isn't, I don't know, very popular.
And so, like, this is Criterion Games. It's like the same people. That's why it's this is based off of the Criterion Games one. Criterion just kind of like, there was a diaspora where people went off and made like Dangerous Golf and Wreckfest. Like, they're like, there is a lineage off of Burnout, specifically like the kind of the wrecking kind of angle to it. But like the core kind of team and technology went to the Need for Speed series. So like, you can like get and play Need for Speed Heat and do Burnout shit in that, and it plays and feels like Burnout. It's just not called that.
No, I just want more Burnout DNA in things.
Yeah.
I want Burnout to be more influential.
Yeah.
The third thing I picked, and this was a real obscurity to me, this might be old news to old arcade heads, but there's a game called Great Swordsman from 1984 from a company called Lumer. All you Lumer heads hoot and holler in. And this is a fencing game. You eventually do different types of sword fighting, but it starts out as fencing, 1v1. You can just move left and right, and you can keep your sword at three different positions through this. You advance and retreat, and you can press a button to strike and extend. And this plays like Nidhogg. Yeah. Nidhogg 2 specifically. A little bit.
Okay.
Not with the territory control, you know, but with the one hit kills. Also like a 2D kind of Bushido Blade. It's like that, but slow. You have to be slow and precise in this. You know, something that happens with arcade games is they're often test of skill. A lot of times they're predatory. There's something that you master just through repetition and then through kind of twitch. You know, eventually in every arcade game, you had to have incredibly fast reflexes.
Yeah.
This felt a lot more strategic to me. Like, it is cited often as an early fighting game, or as kind of, you know, a template for that, but it's real slow.
Yeah.
You know, I love slow in games. I want games to be slower. I want my games slower, made for less money by people who are paid more. This idea of kind of trying to psych out your opponent with this, and I was just playing against the computer, but I imagine this would be an absolute blast at home or with somebody else.
Just a real dance, like trying to draw each other out. Yeah,
trying to draw each other out. I'm going to go high to try to fool you, things like that. Really neat. And fencing, this kind of sword fighting as a thing, is a weird untapped well, I feel like, for games. Like, there are tons of games where you use a sword.
Yeah.
There are not very many games where you do formal fencing, i.e. the sport. Even though fencing is really interesting.
Yeah.
You know,
I wonder if that just like the games lack the precision to bring in like the actual like finesse to it. So it's like, okay, we can't model the basics of this. So it's almost out of reach to model the strategy of it.
Once you move to 3D, it would be crazy.
Yeah.
You know, because you have infinite degrees. Like, this having a high, middle, and low works just fine. But if you try to conceive of this, you know, and that way you get so much more complicated. You know, it'd be very hard for blocking and such not to snap to grid on things.
Yeah.
Eventually, this turns into other kind of sword fighting throughout history. There are like gladiators, there are samurai. I did get, it's hard, you know, but again, that feeling that I could get good at it. I got past the first guy. The bonus stage is an archer standing 3 feet from you, shooting arrows that you had to fence out of the air.
A foil seems like a very bad tool for fencing arrows, for taking arrows out of the air.
It plays very goofy Robin Hood music. It's not the William Tell Overture while this happened. It's very funny.
Great
game. I can imagine this the same way that I feel like Bushido Blade is a really good like party game.
Yeah,
if you had the setup for a two-player thing, this, you know, winner keeps the controller. I imagine this would kick ass.
Yeah,
like this would really, really be fun at a party. And again, really old, 1984.
Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine this, you know, it feels like it would really hold up two-player and was fun to try to master one-player.
Yeah. Like the other kind of sword fighting, it looks like it controls pretty similarly, that maybe there might be some differences, but there's like Japanese fencing, in this. And then there is like gladiatorial.
Yes.
Kind of like Gladius kind of deal. And the gladiatorial one does look very different, actually.
Yeah, I didn't get to that.
Oh, it's hard.
You know, far enough. Yeah, it was hard. But it was fun to try. And it's like, if this is something I had a good home port of, it would be fun to try to like get really good at Great Swordsman.
Yeah, I saw this and then didn't get back around to playing it. I like when we got there, I just took a lap around the place trying to spot stuff. Because I knew if I just started at one side and played everything interesting on the way, I wouldn't have seen everything. So
it was weirdly, it's weirdly hidden. Same thing with Zybots. Like we didn't talk about this. Zybots is in a corner crowded by the Tomb Raider 4-player game. Or not Tomb Raider, Uncharted.
It was Tomb Raider.
Yeah. Okay. Like a big, gigantic, you know, extreme adrenaline amusements, four-player shooter. And then Zybots, you have to say, excuse me. Like, you had to, Garth, like, excuse me, I'd like to play Zybots now in order to get past everybody and play Zybots. This is also a really small, unassuming cart hidden, between two popular games on a big row of arcade games.
Yeah, it just designed not to be seen, placed there specifically to elude you.
Yeah. For my next three, when we get into those, I have less information.
Yeah.
I more tried to call out the cool thing that they do and a little bit why I didn't get hooked by it.
Yes. So, yeah. I'll take kind of the same approach. I will get started here with Bubbles, which you alluded to earlier.
Yeah. Mean potatoes.
Yeah, meat and potatoes is really expected, really basic. This Pac-Man. Is
video games aren't just bleep bloops anymore. Sometimes it's bubbles.
Sometimes it's bubbles. Sometimes it's a sink. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it very clearly is a sponsored game lacking a sponsorship.
Yes.
But this is Williams 1983, which is really early. I'm really surprised. Like I had never seen this before. Mm-hmm. So you are a bubble that is trying to clean the kitchen sink. And there's a drain at the center. You finish the level by getting big enough to survive going down into the drain to the next sink.
This idea of unlimited nesting sinks.
Yes.
That just like a big chocolate fountain that you're going down, but for water.
It's like Carcerai in Planescape, right? Like, you know, each new layer is inside one of the String of Pearls planets. You're just kind of roaming around in the sink, trying to scrub up little bits of food before they go into the drain. Also, cockroaches come out of the drain, and you are competing with other cleaning implements.
Yeah, yeah, I like that a bit.
But as you clean, the bubble gets bigger, and your size is your health. Being hit will reduce your size. And this is super neat just from a premise kind of angle, but also that, kind of flow, like the game flow, side of this where it's just like, okay, you start small. There's stuff that you can't take down, you know, like cockroaches, different size bugs. You have to be big enough in order to not be hurt by them. Right.
Katamari rules.
Yeah. Yeah.
A little bit.
And so that is like interesting strategy to it. I think that why this didn't work for me as much as say like a Timber did, is that you are just kind of in a big open field, making a beeline for the high value point kind of things, just avoiding stuff that moves in a pretty defined pattern. This is weirdly unstructured.
Yeah. That's what, when I played this was on one of my little home thingies. Mm-hmm. That was kind of how I felt about it as well.
Yeah.
It needed like walls, which are a thing that sinks don't have.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it would make it more of like a maze chase kind of thing, but I felt like that would help it.
Yeah. Felt like a maze chase without a maze, which is an interesting thing to take a stab at.
I got one of those on my list as well, basically.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Bubbles. It's also, I like this as a premise for a game.
Yeah,
you know, another thing I like about arcade and early arcade is this idea of this, we have to come up with a premise and no premises are off limits.
Yeah.
As opposed to kind of things becoming more codified.
Yeah. Like we don't need to find all, you know, we don't need to find like the exact lane of previously done stuff
exactly.
to kind of get, you know, get into. Like this was docked by people with, like at the time that it came out, because they said, oh, the graphics are too blue. Like it's really like visually monochromatic. They are very blue. It is eye catching though. Like yeah. it is a strong brand, I think, for this.
I like it too.
Yeah.
My first one that's also a maze chase game without enough maze is Eyes, just called Eyes, which is what drew me to this. It's a 1982 game by Rockola. Mm-hmm. And this is a maze chase game without a maze as well. You just have some kind of walls in there. And this is Pac-Man with a gun. and you are fighting eyeballs with guns. And the pellets, instead of eating them, you shoot them.
Uh-huh.
So it's like the Native Americans had chocolate, your tobacco, but they didn't eat it. They smoked it. Like it's, uh-huh. it's very similar to that Simpsons joke.
Yeah.
So you're kind of moving around, kind of doing a cover shooter thing a little bit again, like as iBots, where when the ghosts, which are eyes, are on the same level as you and have nothing between you and them, they take a second to line up their shot and then shoot. Mm-hmm. So you have to kind of dodge into a different lane.
Yeah.
That's really neat. And you can do the same thing to them. You can wait for them to come around corners and stuff from overhead while trying to shoot all the pellets in the level. I don't know why everything is an eye that shoots.
No.
That doesn't make any sense. It is fun, but it's real bullshit. It needs a little bit more maze to it. It doesn't need just more than just walls. And it feels badly programmed. Enemies spawn on top of you.
Yeah.
That happens with some frequency. They can also spawn right behind you. And then like, it feels like while they're spawning in, their timer to shoot has mm-hmm. already started. So as soon as they appear, they shoot.
Yeah.
This was nonstop unavoidable deaths for me in Eyes, which kind of ruined what would otherwise be a pretty cool premise.
Yeah. I played this because it's a big cabinet called Eyes.
Yeah, it's called Eyes.
Also, its attract mode is really funny because like it's a black screen that just fills up with many, many copies of the word eyes.
I like that a lot too.
until it's
real quick bonus note. This has nothing to do with anything, but one of the things I noticed is in terms of attract mode things is I was walking by the Nerf shooter, which uh-huh. we're not going to talk about here. As I round the corner, it just had huge block letters that said "Welcome to the graveyard." And I like that a lot as a level welcome. Like, you're going to die, Nerf kid. That made me very happy.
Welcome to the graveyard.
Welcome to the graveyard.
Yeah. something at a free play arcade is that when you just kind of like pick something up, you're not invested to like play out the entire quarter. Mm-hmm. I played this and it was so fucking slow that I got bored and I just left it.
Yeah. You had to abandon the game every once in a while.
Yeah. No. I don't know. I didn't care for this very much. No.
Yeah. It's if it were the only game in a laundromat, I would have played the shit out of it.
Yeah. But, yeah. My second one, I didn't realize it was a redemption game because those are weird in free play arcades. I'm talking about Icy Slush Rush, which is a game that you told me was worth paying attention to.
Yeah. I played this as well.
Yeah. This is a very attractive cabinet. This is licensed by the Icy Slush Drink.
Yeah. You know, when you get a place, if you're at a place that doesn't have Slurpees, mm-hmm. they have Icies.
Yes.
All the time.
Yeah. This inspired me. I am currently drinking a cola slush drink.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Those are my favorite kind. Liv is a big slush drink. I'm going to stop using the non-name brand generic. I'm going to call it a Kleenex. Is currently drinking a slushie. Mm-hmm. I love slushies that are, but she loves the blue ones, which I'm not super into blue.
Yeah.
As a flavor. I love the cola ones. And she loves Coke, but not cola slushies. It makes mooching off of her slushies maddening.
They're way too sweet, the blue ones.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the cherry ones, I don't know. There's something off about that flavor.
Sweet wife has a sweet tooth.
Mm-hmm. So I went. That was why we had the little dance around time. You're like, I can go earlier. Like, no, I can't because I went to a convenience store and got it.
That's great.
Yeah,
phenomenal.
Yeah. But this is a neat little like timing game. Like if this is on my phone, I would have it in a little folder called Dexterity Game. With a beautiful cabinet. Your controls are these five like tap handles you have to press. And the idea is that different size cups will appear under the taps, kind of on the screen, corresponding to the different flavors. And you have to pull the taps for just the right amount of time to fill the cup, but not overfill it. And so, if you overfill, it causes a spill. And this, means that you have to, that somebody comes in and wipes up and it delays. And you're trying to fill 58 slushies within a time limit that determines how many tickets you get. But this is just kind of like a real fine tune, little timing game where you just kind of have to develop a bit of a sense for how long of a pull corresponds to which cups. So you're not, kind of whack-a-moling it and then like leaving cups behind that you have to kind of finesse fill.
It's whack-a-mole, but whack them the exact right amount.
Yes.
As a thing. It's just also
let the punishment, let the mole punishment fit the mole crime.
Yeah, exactly. And if you, if you're familiar with Rhythm Heaven, it's PhilBots, but yeah, with a whack-a-mole kind of scenario, you're doing multiple PhilBots with a really novel and attractive interface, yeah, like a gigantic neon slushy handle you get to pull back. Mm-hmm. This is really fun. I like this quite a bit. It is weird to play ticket redemption games at a free play arcade,
yeah,
because they're not made for that. Mm-hmm. You know, so it is very weird to just play this for fun, but it was fun.
Yeah.
I like this.
I didn't realize it was a ticket redemption game. I thought that I was just, it set a goal for me and I wanted to meet it.
Well, yeah. This one, unlike some of them, works pretty well.
Yeah.
As such, there are some ticket redemption games in the arcade that are set to free play that have no business.
Yeah. Yeah.
Doing that.
And I guess what makes this, you know, that it's the redemption game aspect of this that makes it kind of like just not, I don't know. It's way too simple.
Yes.
And in terms of these, you know, I'm not asking to have like backstories for the banana slushies or anything, yeah, like that. Yeah. It's just like a little feat, that you can attempt. And, it's kind of insubstantial because of that, while still, I think, being worth a try because it's fun.
Yeah. It's one of the worst arcade games in the world to own.
Yeah.
Cause you would just master it and then be done.
Yeah.
You know, but for if it's free play, I don't even know if it'd be worth, I mean, it'd probably worth throwing a buck in, you know, throwing a small amount of money in for ticket redemption. But yeah, I like that game quite a bit.
Yeah.
My second game is Bloxied. This is probably my meat and potatoes pick. I think a lot of people know Bloxied.
Yeah.
1989 from Sega. And this is Tetris. This is a very blatant Tetris clone. But it is single player Tetris with power-ups. In my experience, if you want power-ups in Tetris games, it tends to only happen in multiplayer games.
Yeah.
And they're not usually power-ups, they're power downs for your opponent. Mm-hmm. You get to send junk. This is has a bunch of interesting items. Blocks come through, they have a letter in them. If you you unlock this power-up when you complete the line with that letter. And these can be things like giant bombs. These can be things, Flicky from the Sega game Flicky, mm-hmm, comes through as a bird and allows you to put individual blocks in places, like sprinkle them as Flicky goes down the screen.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, like you need to put one block right where you need it, things like, mm-hmm, that. Really cool. And it adds what I want in Tetris, which is like a meta concern or timing concern.
Yeah.
I've talked about New Tetris the entire length of the show. I love New Tetris. Mm-hmm. One of the things, reason why I like New Tetris is you're not just waiting for Tetrises. You're also like, that's fun. I love Tetris, but I like an added level of complexity.
Yeah.
And that when you're making blocks, making 4x4 perfect blocks, in this one, you might be waiting to get a piece that can complete a power up and thus making suboptimal moves,
mm-hmm,
for that. And I think that makes Tetris really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, like a more basic version of this that they really, really, it's really funny if you play that Tetris collection that Digital, mm-hmm, Eclipse puts out, because it is like 50 to 60% bomb tris by volume. It's like mixed, yeah, it's like cheap mixed nuts,
yeah,
with no maximum peanut guarantee.
Yeah.
It's similar to bomb tris. In some ways like this.
It's thing that holds it back is it has a bad algorithm, I think.
Yeah.
One of the things about Tetris, like you can have, this is something Tetris people debate, but having true random versus an algorithm, I don't have a side in that debate from a professional Tetris perspective.
Yeah.
I do from a I don't want to get fucked,
yeah,
by an arcade game perspective. This one is true random. They're the blocks are weighted themselves, but not in relation to other blocks you get. Yeah. And you have no hold piece. So like as I was playing, I got and I counted 8 Z blocks in a row.
Yeah.
That's too many Z blocks in a row. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to do with those.
Yeah.
Too many Z blocks.
like you're just asking me. And maybe that's I don't know. Do you think that might be an attempt to balance against the power ups?
It could not be
too easy. But
the thing I thought about with it is the thing that makes Z blocks fine in regular Tetris is being able to slide things in.
Yeah.
You know, is that you can kind of do the last minute rotate and stuff. That was either impossible or very difficult to pull off here.
Yeah.
So they were just, if you didn't have a proper surface for them, they were just junk blocks, basically. And I really wanted, if it was balancing out the difficulty, it was too harsh.
Yeah.
For it, because I could not engage with the power-up system because I just kept getting Z blocks. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of like, all you give me is drummers as a thing, and it was just very frustrating. But it is a cool idea.
I laughed because of the intonation of your voice. What is the all you give me is drummers?
Mr. Show, it's from the Fallujah, the guy who is the competing with Sousa. To make marching band music. Yeah. And he's talking about his wife is about to give birth. He's like, no, he needs all 9 months to develop strong lungs and fingers. And she goes, I have to give birth now. And he goes, you will bear me an orchestra, woman. All you give me is drummers. And he opens the door and they have like 10 kids that are all playing toy drum sets. And once it is a really underrated Mr. Show sketch.
Yeah, I remember it now.
Yeah. All you give me is drummers. Yeah.
My last one in the this is fun, but there's some stuff that holds it back. I'm not going to call this Dave and Buster's trash because this appears in a lot of places. This has been in pretty much every arcade I've been in the past 15 years, which is Guitar Hero Arcade. Mm-hmm. This version made by a company called Raw Thrills, but it's an arcade version of Guitar Hero 3, came out in 2009, and it's just Guitar Hero. You have two guitars, two of the heaviest guitars on God's green earth.
They made them impossible to steal, like how ATMs are hard to steal.
Yes. Yeah. It's not just that they are like chained to the thing, it is that they have to be, you know, incredibly heavy. You need like a hand truck to carry one of these things. And I don't know if you've run into this out in the world, Gary, because when I see this at an arcade, I will play it because I will never turn down a chance to play Guitar Hero. It's fun. Mm-hmm. Many in the wild, many of these guitars are strapless now.
Yeah, I have seen that before.
Yeah.
Through this. They have to be, one of the reasons why they're actually heavy, even though we keep talking about this, is wear and tear.
Yeah.
You know, plastic instruments don't live up.
Yeah.
To an eternity of bashing.
Moderate home use. Yeah.
Yeah. So this has to deal with way, way more traffic.
Mm-hmm. But you've got like a set list on this thing. Some of the songs, because of their length, I presume they require extra money. Again, because of that turnover thing. It just also happens to be that many of the good songs, the songs you want to play, are premiums as well. You know, I want to roll up to this and play "Peace of Mind" by Boston. Mm-hmm. Sorry, that's going to be an extra dollar.
Yeah,
right.
Great at free arcade though.
Oh yeah. Perfect at a free arcade. I can play Knights of Cydonia all I want.
Yeah.
Yeah. but yeah, this is just really fun. It just has some things that get in the way of it because of the venue. Oftentimes when you encounter this at the wild, it is either so loud that it just ruins the like 20-foot area around it, or it is so quiet that you cannot hear in order to get the timing right. You can't hear the song. That kind of gets in the way. Next level, this problem was mostly evened out. Like the volume was improbably set in a very good way. I parked at this for a little bit, probably a little bit longer than I ought to have, given the plenty of variety that was in front of me. But I wanted to play Guitar Hero because that is an intrinsically rewarding act.
What's interesting and noteworthy is we went to Next Level during a time it was not very busy. Mm-hmm. Which meant that it could be, you could hear this. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you would not be able to. Like, I always look at Guitar Hero and go, cool, I love Guitar Hero, and I want to play one dose of Guitar Hero as somebody who does not have Guitar Hero set up. And then I can never do anything really on the arcade one because I can usually not hear it. Yeah. Arcades are very audio aggressive in general and like stimulation aggressive, which is part of why you go. Yeah. Next Level specifically, what with the, there's not a neutral, there's not one flat texture, I think, in the entire building.
Yeah.
There's no solid colors.
No.
Literally does not exist. So everything is a clashing pattern. I just can't get in the zone with this. I want to, because I like the idea of that dose of Guitar Hero.
Yeah. Also, the downside of this is that the first song that is listed on the set list is Slow Ride by Foghat, terrible song. Yeah. And so you hear it an awful lot if you're around it.
Yeah. They should make songs that are certain BPM illegal. On the Bad Song podcast that me and Andrew are working on. We're trying to bank some episodes before that comes out. That will come out. There are three episodes done. But we're doing recording about today about Cumbersome by 7 Mary 3.
Oh god.
Which is somehow like a reverse BPM.
Too wrong or too right.
It feels so slow. Too wrong, do right. Like it's just like in no hurry to get you excited. It fucking sucks. Moving into the crap section, or like the cheat section or miscellaneous section, or however you want to do this.
Oh, you had Zero Team. You missed one.
Oh, I forgot about Zero Team. Shit. Zero Team is sick. 1993, Saibu Kaihatsu. This is a beat 'em up. So this is a Final Fight clone from 1993, so a little late. But it's a really good one. The reason why it's on this list is because it doesn't do that much unusual. But it's really cool. It has a great sense of kinesthetics. When you hit things, there's a little bit of screen freeze, and it feels really good. Enemies all hit stun, you know, so if you get a combo on a guy, you can stunlock them. The challenge comes from exterior threats, not from guys just deciding not to be hit anymore. Which is a thing I don't like in beat-em-ups. And you have a bunch of special moves. You have four different characters. They play differently. This has been a thing for beat-em-ups forever. But one of the things that's unique about this is they each have a special move that is actually kind of hard to pull off. They're not like Street Fighter combos. That's been done before as well. They're slightly more complicated than that, and they're really rewarding when you do it. It reminds me a lot of getting the spin kick in Double Dragon on the Nintendo.
Oh god, fuck that.
That was like the secret. Like you unlock and it's like, this is the thing that's going to work. And if you can pull it off, it's like that. I played as a lady ninja for one of, I tried all four characters in this because it was legitimately really fun. And her move is like you jump and then hit grab on your way up or hit attack on your way up. And you do a thing where you like lift up the person and throw them at the height of your jump, like kind of flip throw, which will hit other characters. So like this was very hard to execute, but it was great. Like you had a standard screen clear, like you do in beat 'em ups. This one, it's like you do magic and set everybody on fire. It's straight up the Capcom Dalsam on Fire sprite too, and I'm like, you guys aren't Capcom, you guys have rights to that. But the this also fulfilled a space making function, but you could deploy it at any time with no cost if you could pull it off. It was really cool. Fun game. Like Zero Team.
So I saw this and I kind of passed it over because a beat 'em up, I don't know. It's very understated as far as beat 'em up goes.
As far as presentation. It's not really interesting. Like it's not a spectacle game so much.
No. And so I feel kind of bad just having overlooked it for such a kind of like a shallow reason. Because it just looked like dudes. Like I don't think you can get away with a Final Fight. And you know, 1993, like I've got X-Men, I can play ass.
You can play X-Men, you can play Aliens and Predator.
Yeah.
You know, where you get to be the guy with the cyborg arm or like a fucking Predator. You know, like you could be a lot cooler a thing in a beat 'em up than these four people.
Yeah, but I think some stuff that kind of like stands out for this is like your like the smallness of your sprite. Like, I don't know, it's neat that you have a lot of room to move around.
A lot of screen real estate in this. And it works well with at least that one super move I figured out, that throw, because you need a lot of space to do that. And to make it effective. Like I felt a little warmer towards beat 'em ups recently, again because of this retro kick, and just seeking things that are simple. And we're in a renaissance. You know, for them. Like Cosmic Invasion is really good. You know, fun games. You know, and the they kind of give you that spectacle feeling. This does it a little bit in terms that it's fun to punch stuff, but it's a little deeper than initially seemed. I quite liked it. I'm a little surprised I never heard of it.
Yeah.
Before this, like, it does not come up in people's list of underrated beat 'em ups.
Yeah. Looks neat.
Yeah. Good game. Zero team.
Zero team. Let me get back to, sorry, I'm going back and forth between, notes and videos here. Yeah. So kind of going into the, territory while still being like interesting to talk about, kind of deal. I've got a game, from a Polish studio, came out in 1989. It's called Blockout. The studio is called California Dreams, which is fun. Yeah. This is another
arcade. Is there a Hot Chili Peppers dad? Is their studio?
Yep.
I assume they all have the same dad.
Yeah, yeah. Otherwise, why would they be together?
Yeah. They all seem to have a big bed. Good night, Flea. Good night, John Frusciante.
Good night, Anthony Kiedis and the suspiciously young woman you have in the bed with us.
Good night, demons in my semen.
So this is a 3D Tetris. You are looking down into the well and trying to place 3D blocks. It's kind of a similar idea to Weltris, except instead of like building up on the sides of the well, you're actually like filling it. This is a premise that would be used on the Virtual Boy with Tetris 3D. Mm-hmm. And in theory, this is really cool, right? You have to think spatially with kind of a limited visual, amount of information, right? Because higher levels will block what's beneath. So like setting up combos, you really have to plan it. My problem with this was that despite how much it seemed like it would have been absolutely for me, this controls really, really bad.
Yeah, it's really, really hard.
And it's really slow. There's no fluidity. Like, it felt like there was a lot of delay. Not just like between when I pressed the buttons, but like between when it would accept, or there was delay in it accepting any input, you know, to move, to rotate, to any of that. So like, you had to get a sense for, am I allowed to press a button or not right now?
Yeah. In addition to it, it uses grid lines. Mm-hmm. To kind of signal the size of things, since, you know, it's not true 3D or anything like that. And this does work, but it took more time to read than I wanted it to for me. Like, I had to think about, like, I think that's the reason why it's such slow pace.
Yeah.
But that is antithetical to a Tetris, like, where you want to get into a flow state of there being no space between your brain and your hands. In this, there was so much space between my brains and my hands because I had to look and try to figure out what shape and what scale I was working at before even doing anything.
Yeah.
It's a neat idea. It's an idea that like almost is necessary, you know, like you look at Tetris spinoffs and like, this is very obvious as opposed to like something like a Hatris, which is, you know, cocaine behavior.
Nobody was expecting him to say that.
Yeah. But you know, this necessary as an idea, this logically comes out of Tetris.
Yeah.
But it's also something I've never seen done great. You know, the Virtual Boy one, I've got that little Virtual Boy cardboard attachment for my Switch for the Virtual Boy thing. We got to do Mario Clash at some point.
Yeah, that's a good game.
You know, for the show. It's a good game and it'd just be interesting to talk about. Mm-hmm. But the it's never quite worked for me, this type of 3D Tetris.
Yeah.
So, no. Agreed. Moving into my lessers, for some reason, I have this one. This is not a bad game. I just kind of wanted to talk about it. Yeah. Ice Cold Beer in 1983 by Taito. This is a mechanical game, by which mean it's like all, you know, it's like a pinball machine and it's bits of metal, magnets and shit like that.
It's a mechanical amusement.
It's a mechanical amusement. You have a ball bearing falls down and you have a metal bar and you have two sides of it you raise independently with dials. And you try to navigate this ball up a series of numbered holes, scooting around holes you don't want to get into. So you try to go into hole number one, number two, et cetera. They're positioned higher on the board as you raise it. Like the board game Labyrinth.
Yeah.
A little wooden box. We talked about that. It's a lot like that, except vertical.
Mm-hmm.
Perfectly fun. Perfectly fine. The idea, something I'm really obsessed with are things that do not attempt their metaphor in their mechanics at all. Whenever I talk about the Oblivion conversation system,
Yes.
I love that. It does not make an attempt to resemble a conversation. Why this is called ice cold beer and what you're actually doing is fucking impossible to suss out. Like, there's wood grain and stuff on the table. It could be a bar.
Uh-huh.
And with the best will in the world, you could say that the ball bearing is a beer you're trying to deliver to certain patrons, but other patrons are going to try to grab it. They're the other holes or something.
So, like, the cabinet design, it does seem like you are, like, the wood grain is supposed to be beer colored. I think that it is a glass of beer, and the holes but also the ball bearing are supposed to be bubbles, right? Like, this needs to, like, it looks like a carbonated beverage.
Okay, you're trying to get a bubble to the top.
Yes.
Okay.
Without falling into the negative beer, universe bubbles.
It is kind of, you know, beer color. There's a little bit of foam in the art at the above. That makes sense as a thing. I don't know why that would be a goal.
Mm-hmm.
As a thing, I was mistaken. It's not dials. You're just using joysticks.
Yeah.
I just looked up a copy of it. It's pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't get it. Like, even though, you know, even saying that, it's like, yeah, no, it does kind of look like bubbles you're trying to get, but why does getting a bubble partway up and popping it better than getting it, you know, partway up and popping it right next to that part?
There are other things that they could have done. And I think that, like, I don't know, this might have been lost to history if it wasn't for that name. Because it does feel like any number of other kind of ticket games, right?
Yeah. It's not, weirdly, not a ticket game.
Yeah.
Which would make a lot of sense for this type of game. I also just like a game called Ice Cold Beer.
Yeah.
As just an object. are you trying to get the beer? No.
Nope.
You are the beer.
You're not the beer. You are a bubble in the beer.
Yeah. You are an agent of beer.
Yeah.
No.
But yeah, just this kind of like precise, kind of nerve wracking, you know, you gotta manipulate this physical object. That is super neat.
A thing that's interesting about it, if it were a ticket game, there'd be a time limit.
Yeah.
As far as I could tell, there wasn't one. At least one didn't kick in. Mm-hmm. So you could spend a lot of time doing like monkey ball, like precision monkey ball shit almost.
Yeah.
Trying to roll around stuff in this.
I have to imagine this is a fucking nightmare to maintain.
Yeah. They show up for sale a lot. This is a popular game for people to have at home, I assume, because of the name.
Uh-huh.
This is like a basement arcade or like, you know, arcade shed kind of thing. So it's one of the arcades that are easy to find on sale. From places. But I can also imagine it just absolutely, like, pinball games, like an actual pinball machine would be such a nightmare to maintain. That is, you know, it's gotten rid of that illusion for me, a desire. Yeah. Thinking about that, this would also be that. On top of also not being as fun to replay.
Mm-hmm. No. I didn't play pinball when we were there, but one of the nice parts about being at Next Level at kind of an off time was they were doing maintenance on the pinball machines. So, like, as I was walking in between places, you get to see inside the things. Game. That's real cool. I am loving this. I want to see you backstage on everything.
I like that. And then I also liked that a bunch of these like brand new pinball machines that during a busier time might be crowded.
Yeah.
You know, I played this already at like a place in town, but there's a Pokemon pinball game that came out. I don't like it very much, but it's attractive, you know. And then the Dungeons and Dragons one is kind of old news, but there's a new X-Men one and a Labyrinth one. The Labyrinth one is really impressive.
Oh, huh.
And cool. I played a little pinball while I was there. Liv said to play X-Files for her, which I did. And then I was like, okay, I want to play this other stuff too.
Yeah. Oh. The next one in my kind of realm is a game that they had right at the front, and it drew my eye because, hey, arcade fishing game. It's called Wicked Tuna, developed by Unis Technology in 2022.
The Unis group. Oh, yeah.
Gretchen, Unis, Doris. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is a fishing game. I didn't realize it was based on a reality TV show.
About a particular tuna.
Yeah. Just going out. It's kind of a Kangaroo Jack thing.
Yeah.
But
it's a fish out of water story, literally.
It's actually just really sad.
The whole movie is just an asphyxiating.
It's a static shot of it and
when it dies, you get the backstory of why it deserved it. That's why it's called Wicked Tuna.
Yes.
And weirdly, it's just because the tuna was gay. It's a deeply conservative game. It kind of sucks. Like, it's very surprising, like, or TV show. As you watch it, like, you're like, okay, well, maybe this tuna deserved it. And you see a bunch of stuff that's like, maybe. But then in the end, it's just like, dad was a preacher.
Yeah.
Fucking sucks.
Yeah, no, terrible situation. Yeah. The funniest thing about this is selecting your character, because it's just like one of four just, you know, kind of guys. Like, yeah, oh yeah, these guys
on the show.
Guys would be fishing, yeah. But it's just dudes. Also, at some point it says points are based on meat. Which is good. I didn't realize that this was a redemption game, because for all the world, it looks like a big, like a big dumb arcade game. It is so fucking shallow, Gary.
Yeah.
Which is ironic for a game about the depths. You do have a fishing reel controller.
Mm-hmm.
But it kind of doesn't matter what you do with it. It is just, are you reeling or are you not? There's a little timing mini game to determine which fish you're gonna hook, like on a little fish radar kind of deal. And then it's just reel when the fish is in the air, and then don't reel when it's not.
Yeah,
and that's it. I didn't expect, again, the backstory about the preacher's son, which is a tuna, or like a whole bunch of kind of like rigor to this. But the fact that it is just reel in as many fish as you can makes it into almost like a little exercise that you have to do, kind of mindlessly.
Ridiculous fishing is right there as something is, to like rip off for this kind of thing, like a ticket based fishing game.
Yeah. Yeah. I was really disappointed by this, because I expected a fishing game in the arcade to be a little bit more interesting, a little bit weirder.
There are fishing games in the arcade. Mm-hmm. There just aren't any at next level right now.
Yeah.
We ran into this with Family Guy Bowling. You were talking about wanting to play that to play the bowling game. Did you play Pabst Blue Ribbon Bowling? Or no, Coors Light Bowling?
No, I didn't play Coors Light Bowling. No.
There's a bowling game there, Coors Light Bowling, which is fun and easy. But the greatest thing about it is getting to see the the animations.
Yeah.
This is what you want, like an extremely sexy pin, like a come finger me pin.
Yay.
Like looking at you, like smoking after having been fingered to completion as a bowling pin. Like, that's that kind of interface in the dad sport.
Yeah.
Genre in arcades, like of which golf is, I'd say included, is neat when you see it. It's just this one doesn't do it.
No, not at all.
I played this as well after you had mentioned it. It's not good.
Nope.
My second, this is just an oddity thing, is they have a copy of Hellfire, which is a Nintendo game, first party Nintendo, 1980. This is never talked about. First party Nintendo stuff, it gets Smash Brothers trophies. Yeah, that's one thing you can say for it. I don't think this does, though. This is one of the rarest arcade games. I looked this up afterwards because, I've never seen Hellfire. What the fuck's Hellfire? Yeah. According to the Video Arcade Preservation Society, this is extremely rare. With good cause, because it's dog shit. It's so bad. Wildly derivative. It's kind of like a Space Invaders clone, except you can shoot in multiple directions. But you're a sub. And you think, okay, I'm going to be doing sub stuff. No, you're fighting helicopters coming in from the top. Mm-hmm. You're just a sub that, instead of, shooting your periscope, shooting vision, it shoots missiles.
Yes.
Up. through this. It's really derivative and bad. Its control's really stiff. It's, picking on early Nintendo is unfair because they're still figuring it out. But in terms of things that R&D1 made, this is crazy.
This didn't feel like an arcade game to me.
No.
It just 1980, that's early, but I don't know. Better, more fluid playing games had already been put out.
Space Invaders had come out.
Yeah, Space Invaders. I think Galaxian, at the very least, had come out. Yeah.
And then I'm not counting Asteroids. Stuff like that. 1980, there were arcade games that played a little bit smoother than this.
Yes.
But just what a weird rarity. And a first-party Nintendo thing that nobody cares about and they have no interest in kind of reviving.
Yeah. There was a submarine game on the 3DS that kind of reminded me of this.
Silent Scope.
Silent Scope is the sniper game.
Yeah. What is it called? I played that one. That is a remake of an old Nintendo arcade game, but that one's pretty different. That one has a map, kind of a 3D map. Mm. It's more 3D perspective. Yeah. I played that as a 3DS early adopter, but I can't remember the name of it right now. That game's not bad.
Steel Diver is what it's
called.
Steel
Diver. Yeah, not bad. Like that is not a bad video game, at least on the 3DS. This is worse than that. But it was their obsession with submarines.
Yeah.
At the time.
I can kind of see, because you're like dealing with not just the threat coming from above, but also there are like torpedoes coming from the side, like from a just a sheer amount of like what you are to keep track of kind of angle. This being, something to chew on. It just didn't feel good. I think the feel accounts for so much in an arcade game.
Feel, and there's a reason why things don't come, you know, you have some time before things come from the side in like a Centipede or Space Invaders.
Yeah.
You know, like you need that. Here it felt like you'd fight helicopters for a little while and then just a bunch of shit would come in from the side while you were fighting the helicopters, and you did not have any defensive vocabulary or, you know, the way to respond meaningfully.
Yeah.
To this in any way. So, in it being a bummer, I cannot wait for the next Nintendo Direct that's entirely about Hellfire.
I'll do my last kind of version. I don't think that this is a terrible game. It's very popular. The only reason I hadn't played it before is just because it's always like kind of crawling with kids specifically. Mario Kart Arcade GP DX, RIP, SOS,
NCIS.
Yep. This one, this is put out in 2013 by Namco.
Yeah, it's old.
Extremely old. And the series goes back, like the first one came out in 2005. Is when it came out.
I saw your note here, and you had a typo of saying 1995, which I thought you were making a joke about the Mario Kart series. Like people actually think the series is new, but it's actually pretty old.
Yeah.
And I was like, that year was wrong. I had to like, you know, hope somebody got fired for that blunder, but now I understand. A typo. Which I don't want anyone fired for typos.
No, I saw the 1995 and I had to like I ran a little maze in my head to figure out, okay, wait a minute. Cause I'm always losing decades. Yeah. But this is Mario Kart in the arcade, play with a wheel and pedals. And this series, the GP series, is like a little like side venture. Most notable, I think, because it just like a shitload of power-ups. A lot of power-ups that do not appear in the mainline Mario games,
even though there are some that behave the same way.
Yes,
like I've played a bunch of this in arcades and stuff. Like I will usually sit down and play a Mario Kart round if I'm there, just to get a little bit of Mario Kart in me. It's not good Mario Kart, it's like methadone cart, the thing that cruises around the ward and helps everybody out.
It's real bleak, like a Deftones song plays.
it's pretty bleak, but you know, they're trying, it's good. You know, it's bleak, but you're pulling for them. The thing that was amusing to me about this, or when in a strictly amusing definition, like the reason why I was drawn to it as an amusement was this idea of having new courses based on Namco properties. You know, Pac-Man is a racer in this. The Taiko drum is driving a little cart. The drum is driving a car.
Dodo Pond or something.
You know, and there's it's fun to watch to kind of see these new carts with that new aesthetic.
My problem is just that Mario Kart feels so made for a home environment, like the scale of it. Your character on the screen, the speed that you go, it just feels really, really off, and it doesn't feel right alongside other arcade racers to me. Additionally, playing Mario Kart with a wheel and pedal feels just wrong. I'm sure you can get used to it, but like so much of the like specific movement that you're, you know, required to do to excel in a Mario Kart, your the brake drifting and stuff like that to do charge ups with it. It feels like a wheel and pedals are not set up to let you do that.
Like analog is tougher to do that with in this. I agree. I like how this looks. It's very pretty. You know, it takes a picture of your face and you get to have your character's like kind of headdress. You know, who you're playing. That's fun. The thing that I find frustrating about this, because this is usually crawling with kids. So I played a little bit of this when we were there because it wasn't crawling with kids. And is the idea that when it's one of those games where you put in your quarter or whatever, you know, it's free play, but you put in your credit. If you win, that's it though. You just have to put in another credit to do another race. You just pay for one race. Mm-hmm. And that's fine, but it does eliminate that sense of progression.
Yes.
And that sense of kind of cumulative victory that comes from Mario Kart, like this idea of like my overall score is being judged. Mm-hmm. So I can win some and lose some and kind of make it up. Like that's one of the things I like about Mario Kart's, you know, track system is like, I really, you know, walk the dog on that one. Let's make it up.
Yeah.
You know, that's an exciting feeling to me.
You get that drama. And I mean, that's the thing that makes Super Mario or Mario Kart World work really well for me.
We're the only two people in the world who like Super Mario Kart World. Have you seen all of the like just drive-by slams that game gets?
Fucking no.
It's crazy.
Because I played it for several hours when I got my Switch 2 and then just didn't pick it up again and didn't pay a lot of attention to it.
I like that game a whole. I thought that was really fun. I still like pick it up from time to time. It's real fun as like a Tony Hawk like in the free world. It can do a bunch of weird shit in it. You're not scored, it doesn't have the goals, but you can. But like people talk about that game like somebody I saw, and I'm not calling anybody out, you know, I'm not, this is just their opinion, not trying to dogpile them or anything like that. I was just surprised to see it. Where the soundtrack for it came out on the little Nintendo radio thing.
Okay.
And it was like, oh, now you can listen to the soundtrack without having to play this game. That's the thing. And I was like, wow.
Excuse me. What?
Yeah. I was just very surprised to see it. Like, what game did people play?
Yeah.
And it reminded, I think that people were upset that it didn't have like staying power. And I just don't expect that from a Mario Kart.
No.
You know, I go back to Mario Kart when I'm in the mood for Mario Kart, and I do the current Mario Kart when that happens.
Yeah.
You know, I don't expect something. I'm not never doing a dollar per hour ratio thing on Mario Kart.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, it was just, it's fascinating to see.
Yeah.
So people don't like Mario Kart World. Huh.
But yeah, the single race thing is a little bit of a bummer on that. I don't know. You could probably fix that by making the tracks shorter, you know?
Yeah.
And you do a circuit. You know, or just like, you know, pay extra to do a circuit. I don't know. Yeah. But, in looking this up, there's a follow-up, that came out, relatively recently, Mario Kart Arcade GP VR. And it is a game that is designed for people to not play it. For most of its lifespan, it has only appeared in one place in Japan. You're hooked into an HTC Vive VR headset while you're playing it. And the figure that I saw is that, you know, to play it is $40. $40 per throw. Yeah. Fucking wild.
That seems off.
Yeah.
I wonder if that was a translation error or something like that.
Because
like the $4 a throw is also pretty expensive.
Yes.
You know, as a thing. But it would make more sense for something like that, create, you know, that specific. Yeah, I love it. There's just being one. It's like the Quickie Mart headquarters.
No.
You know, it's thing, like you have to make a sojourn. You're $40 and you just drive off the track immediately.
Oh, you want to play Mario Kart or KGP VR? Do you really want to play it? Do you really, really want to play it?
Thank you. Dome Arigato. It's not as good as I want it to be.
Yeah,
as a thing. When I first found out about this in my early 30s, I'm a certified Mario Kart freak.
About the arcade or about the VR one?
Not the VR one, the original arcade one. I was so excited, and for a long time, like out of stuff we talked about on this episode, I think this is the most popular thing.
Oh yeah, yeah.
This is never not crawling. I couldn't get into this a lot. Kids love this.
They do. And I can understand it. And I'm not, you know, walking up to them and saying, oh, Need for Speed Heat Takedown is obviously you're superior.
Fun.
Yeah. No, I'm not going to do that. It's just, I had, you know, wanted to play this, but I just never had a chance to. And then I sat down and I was like, oh, I never really thought about like how Mario Kart would feel in an arcade in this setting. And it doesn't feel right.
That's one of the interesting things about Mario Kart IMO is that kart racing translates racing games to the home.
Yes.
Console. Like racing games, you can play them on home console. They're perfectly fine. And now that the line has completely disappeared, you can play arcade experiences.
Yeah.
But for a time, like I never really got into like Outrun, you know, things of that nature, because it felt like things would come up on me too quick to react. Again, slow is good. Mario Kart having the pokey pace.
Yeah.
You know, ended up making it play like a new thing to me.
I don't think this is one where you can play as Pokey.
No, but you do hit a Pokey. in the
desert.
Yeah, in the desert. My final thing, demerit here, is Dark Adventure, 1987 Konami. This is the worst thing I played. Mm-hmm. They're other perhaps than Hellfire. It's Konami, you know, so I was expecting something. But one of the things easy to forget about the giants of the 80s and 90s, like Konami, mm-hmm. Capcom, things like that, is they made tons of games.
Survivorship
bias. I had never seen Dark Adventure before. This is kind of a gauntlet clone, but with bigger sprites. And you kind of play, the main character is Indiana Jones. All the aesthetics are Indiana Jones. There are other characters that have projectiles instead, you know, but you play as Indiana Jones by default. Melee, you can run around, jump. You walk around, you have an 8-way joystick. There are monsters, there are monster layers around, like Gauntlet. There's a key and an exit. Mm-hmm. It's not fun. Not a fun game, but there are two kind of interesting things about it that I noticed. One is, they're in these outdoor environments, they're cliff sides. If you hit them, you fall down gradually, and you can kind of climb back up by tapping jump, and it does not look like an intended mechanic. It looks janky. It looks like when you do Skyrim climbing. Mm-hmm. You know, for people who are not familiar, you find a mountain you're not supposed to go up, and if you just kind of press forward enough and tap, mm-hmm. jump enough, a lot of times you can get up stuff.
Yeah,
you're not supposed to get up. This is that in 1987. It may be an intended mechanic. It just doesn't feel like it.
Yeah,
there's no animations for it. Your character kind of like just teleports up slowly mm-hmm. as you tap. You have to tap unusually fast.
Yeah, no, that sounds like an exploit.
Yeah, it's weird. You know, mm-hmm. it's kind of neat. You know, you're fighting a big thing. You start, you lose track of your footing. You fall off the thing. You have to like quickly get back up. But while you're doing that, the, you know, giant earth elementals and little goblins and stuff are still hitting you. Mm-hmm. And then the third level has a thing that I've never seen before in an arcade game, where you start next to an ant. After about a second, it will grab you with one of its hands and kill you. And okay. every direction I moved, from there, it did the same thing. I would go into its kill zone. And I had unlimited tries at this, you know, so I just like hit, you know, go, credit, and just kept doing this.
Yeah.
For a long time, pressed in every direction you could, from this, I just kept getting scooped up. I don't know what I needed to do. There is a screen clear attack in this. You can have TNT. Mm-hmm. Which is something I didn't have any, through this. So I don't know what I was meant to have done.
Yeah.
I suppose I could have started with another player, mm-hmm. like joined in on the other side of the map, and then maybe like killed the thing with a projectile, but like, I don't know what I was supposed to do. It might was well one of the cheapest arcade things I've ever seen.
It might as well have just been a screen that said, put in another quarter, please.
But not just one quarter. Like over and over. I did put it in. I pressed that button a whole lot. I tickled that. There's no way past
the screen. You just do it.
Yeah. You could not do it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sucks. And also, it like plays bad and does not look particularly good. Looks fine for 1987, actually, but like is not good.
Yeah. Here's my question. Is there a purpose to the jump?
Yes, you do. It's kind of a dodge, and then there are rickety rope bridges from time mm-hmm. to time that you have to cross that have some missing planks.
Okay. Yeah.
So
the jump animation, this is one of the funniest things I've ever seen. You jump up really high. It looks like your guy's going, wee!
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's up there with the RoboCop 2 jump animation from this.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of just like, I like seeing a new animation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, this sucks. Just, you know, this and Hellfire, just watching giants of the industry fucking throw up bricks.
Base plant. Yeah.
So, that's our arcade field trip. Mm-hmm. This was a little bit part of the Get Caught Up initiative. I'm going on a little trip, mm-hmm. Through this, and we needed something with slightly less prep time. But again, I don't want to ignore the arcade.
No.
What's cool about this is I learned about 9 games that I've never heard anyone talk about.
Yeah. You know. And I'm happy that I got to, you know, A, go to Next Level again, but B, like search out like interesting interaction models.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Next Level is a great arcade. They do rotate out their stuff with mm-hmm. some frequency. I was very much hoping for Rampart because I wanted to take this opportunity to do a deep dive on Rampart.
Yeah.
That will still come up at some point. Mm-hmm. I owe it to my life to be the person who talks about Rampart in detail because I love fucking Rampart.
There was a really interesting game that a little bit reminded me of Rampart. It was like Breakout, but you're playing it from four sides. Yeah. And the target, the bricks were in the center. Yeah.
Yeah, I played that as well. That was really hard.
Yeah.
To me, weirdly, like you need the very tuned dial there, but it was really tuned.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I felt like I was overshooting my my little paddle a bunch. I like Breakout. Like I will play Breakout.
Yeah.
That is that's the episode. Thanks everybody for listening. We appreciate it. If you have arcade stories, and let's keep them, you know, again, we've all had fun playing through X-Men 6 players. Let's get obscure with it in the spirit of the episode. Write in at duckfeed.tv/contact with your thoughts.
The other games that we're talking about this month that you can write in about. Oh, we're so far ahead, aren't we? I forget. Is this Loop Hero? There we go.
Yeah, Loop Hero.
Yeah. You know, Loop Hero or Baby Steps. Go to duckfeed.tv/contact and write in with those. The deadline is always the 15th of the month.
Yeah, we would appreciate it. If you have thoughts about next month's games, which are Neon White, that is going to be a guest episode with Kay and Gwen while I am back home. Did you see on Blue Sky that I'm going to a 5-story fancy dress mansion to experience 3 hours of fine dining and magic?
No.
I made my birthday and Christmas present to myself. There's an old mansion in Chicago that used to be a high society location.
Okay.
And a bunch of magicians bought it, and they have like magicians in residence, and they're famous magicians. And you go there in cosplay, basically. Like you have to be dressed up. There's a dress code. It's cocktail dress code, which made me more nervous than anything has ever made me in my life. you go there and you get like really fancy dinner, and you get close up magic on the bar, and then go see a couple shows while exploring a big old cool mansion.
Yeah,
I am very excited.
That sounds like you would really enjoy that.
You would enjoy that. Yeah. I mean, the dress up part is a little cringy.
Yeah.
They have the dress code thing is very funny. It has no steampunk hats. Because some people are like, I fucking figured out the code. And they're like, no.
They know.
Actual classy.
Yes. Like,
come on, let's actually treat ourselves with a little bit of self-respect here. For God's sake. There's an element of that to it that is funny.
Let's treat ourselves with a little bit of respect here. There's magic about.
Yeah, exactly. This is the one. This is the sweet science. But anyway, so I'm going back home. That's the Neon White's episode. Next up is Grun. Then we got Proteus. That is the SNES version. I checked that. Somebody asked about that. Thank you for asking. I went and double checked with the patron. And then the premium episode for that month is Mario Wonder.
Yes.
Everybody gets the generalities. For those, for Baby Steps and for Mario Wonder and all of our past ones, Rage last month and such. And patrons at patreon.com/duckfeedtv get the whole deal at the duck level.
Yeah. Now the shout out, right?
Yeah.
There we go. Okay. Yeah. We normally do a shout out for marginalized creators at the, when we have them here in the episodes. I wanted to do a shout out for some people that have been hanging around with. They are electrolysis workers who are on strike right now. They're on strike from a shop called Real U Electrolysis Workers. You can just do a search for Real U Electrolysis Workers United, or go to ryewu.card.co. Also make sure that there's a link put in here. Their bosses treating them like shit, so they have unionized in record time in order to get the horrible practices fixed. They have not abandoned their clients. They're helping arrange alternative care for them. But yeah, the stories are really rough. They have a GoFundMe for their strike fund, which you can see at the card website. And if you have a few bucks to kick in for a mostly trans electrolysis union, those people in need as they're getting this worked out, consider doing that. That is ryewu.card.co.
If you want to support us, there's that Patreon we mentioned. There's also ratings, reviews, Apple Podcasts, Podcast Addict, anywhere you find podcasts. You can subscribe. You can talk about us on message boards. You can join our Reddit. You can, if you're in the Patreon, you can join us on Discord. We appreciate all those things.
Yeah.
And that's going to be it for this episode. What should they watch out for until next week?
Watch out for Thinking Gwen.
Now watch out for forgetting to think Gwen. I'm always thinking Gwen. I just do it on my spare time.
Yeah.
I'm not just doing it for show on the podcast. Like sometimes I'm just sitting around in my house eating lunch thinking Gwen.
Just now out into the air. Yeah. You can also watch out for your sink. Clean that up. Role play bubbles in real life.